Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This episode of The Honeydew is brought to you by Upstart, Omax, and Odd One Out Comics. More on that later. Let's get into The Dew.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to The Honeydew, y'all. We are over here doing it in the Nightpant Studios. I am Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. And as always, I want to sincerely say thank you to everyone out there. Thank you for however you support the show, whether it's through sponsors, merch, comments, just nice, whatever it is. Thank you, for real. It makes a difference. Right now is a strange time, so I appreciate the positivity back. I really do. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. We've got time codes in there if you want to jump to different stories. Make sure if you have a story or someone you know has a story you think needs to be told and heard, sign up for the Patreon show and submit your story, honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. All the links are on the honeydewpodcast.com. I can't thank you enough, Nightpants Nation. You guys, I want you to know, you sold out the manufacturer's fucking nightpants. Like, those people are like, what's going on out there? And it's a revolution is what the fuck's going on. So thank you for your comfortable support. Facebook fan page, all that stuff, it's all there. As far as what we do here, if you're new, we highlight the lowlights. I always say these are the stories behind the storytellers. Today, I'm very excited to have my guest, first time here on The Honeydew. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the one and only Tom Arnold, y'all.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, young man.
Right. Now, what are night pants?
Thank you. Night pants are, you probably call them pajamas or loungewear.
Oh, I like that.
But I put them on at night.
Yeah.
Called them my night pants.
Put them on during the day if you're fat.
Or
I wear them. That sounds like something that me and the kids would like.
I haven't been in a pair of jeans since this shit hit. Since
March. Well, you know, and also I thought you meant night pants like that you could see at night when you're out looting. And night shirt. You know, I do.
It's a good idea, though.
It is a good idea,
joggers,
man.
Night pants joggers.
Jeez Louise.
See them at night.
And you get a good movement. You know, it's good to be here. Now, I know you from comedy, right?
We do.
Yeah.
Laugh Factory is where we first met.
There you go.
Back when I did your show there. That's how I met Joel Mandelkorn.
Oh, yes. Joel Mandelkorn, my old assistant.
What's that? Yeah.
My old assistant.
Still working with Joel. He's a great dude.
He is a great dude.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Joel
and Mandy, fantastic.
Can I tell a Joel story? Do you mind if I tell Joel?
I don't.
Mandelkorn?
Can I say one thing real quick? Mandy Johnson, Joel's partner, has a fantastic book out called Super Serious. I've promoted it. Go find it on my IG, wherever, and get it. It's a great book about alternative comedy in Los Angeles. Please.
She is so talented. Yeah. Well, Joel started working for me, Joel Mandelkorn, and I was living over here. I've been divorced. Only four times. And there is a building called 1221 Ocean Boulevard. It's on the ocean. It's beautiful. And it's where a lot of divorced people live. Or it's a great, you know, temporarily. Britney Spears is my next door neighbor then. And she was actually married to Kevin Federline at the time. But you see a lot of people in and out. And it'd be a great building to do a TV show about. Because you hear and see a lot of great things in there.
It's sort of like that in-between jobs, like that building.
Yeah, but it's actually...
in-between jobs was an apartment complex.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had it's a beautiful building. I had a delightful time there. And, you know, my friend, there's a guy named David Foster who is probably the best music composer of all time. The people he's worked with, Michael Jackson, Andre Bocelli. He has a there's a documentary about David Foster. He is the best of the best, and he's been married more than once. And I love all of his wives. And he was, but he's an amazing human being who's, he's worked with every big band. And he was in between marriages too. And he came downstairs. He had a girlfriend and he may have married her probably. Anyway, he came downstairs and there's an office area, big, that people come in to do their work, to do whatever. And he kind of was like, "Hey, Tom, how you doing?" And he's kind of like, "Shh." And he called another lady. Who was not his girlfriend. And he wasn't like engaged to the woman. And he's like, you know, he's talking to this other gal. He was in between. And he's like, keep it, you know, of course I'm going to not say anything. And then about, he went upstairs and about 20 minutes later, his girlfriend came down and she called it a guy. And I just thought that is the funniest thing in the world. And then I had in the Ryan Reynolds lived there too at the time.
God,
and
damn.
He's a great, he worked out in the gym there and I saw him one day and then he went on, and I saw him and I don't think he saw me because he went on Conan O'Brien and he was on the cover of like Men's Health magazine looking super fit. And, Conan pulled that out and he got such great self-deprecating humor, Ryan Reynolds. I love him. He's an amazing dude. And he said he wanted to make fun of himself because he didn't like it. He was uncomfortable that Conan pulled that out because he looked so amazing. And he said, but when I let out my breath, I look like Tom Arnold. He just said that. And then I saw him in the gym and said, yeah, thanks a lot. And I played it tough.
I'm in 4C, motherfucker.
And then, but then came to my door. Upstairs, a note and a bottle of champagne of Dom Perignon that said, "Listen, that was a classless thing for me to do. I apologize, Ryan Reynolds." And it was a bottle of champagne. And then I took that note and sent it back to his room saying, "I'm a recovering alcoholic."
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just said, but, and, yeah, but,
that's what I'm talking about.
But I love him. I just love him. And, I genuinely
don't. That's really nice.
That,
yeah.
I'm honored that someone would make a joke about me. I've always been like that. Like, you have to be, since I started this business, you know, for someone to make a joke about you, for Johnny Carson or anyone, you know, it's funny. You know, that was so funny. And then to be able to keep it going.
They gotta know who the fuck you are.
Yeah. So anyway,
you're out there doing.
Yes,
something.
They do. And when you're a name that people know. So Joel Manicord became my assistant based on his credentials, and Mandy was his girlfriend, and you know, and she's very cute and very smart. And
this is awesome.
So anyway, Joel starts working for me, and he's sitting in front of me. We're in that apartment working, and I did have a wife at the time. I can't remember if it was Julie or Shelby. It was in between Roseanne and my last wife, and. We're sitting there, and Joel has a you know, and you want to address everything when you meet him. Like, hey, let's just get this out of the way, not a big deal. And I said, you know, I think that Joel may have had I said to my wife, let's say it's Shelby. Let's say Shelby. Hey, I think Joel might have a cleft. Palette. And she's like, oh, I go, I'm going to ask him. She says, what? Don't, I'm leaving. I go, no, I think he'd be cool. I think I just got to address it. She's like, do not say, I go, no, I think he's cool. Like, I would want somebody to address if I was, you know, was missing an arm or something. I think we're going to be there. So he's sitting behind me. And so I go like this to Joel. Hey, Joel. And she's still in the room. She's like, oh, I freaking hate you. Hey, Joel, listen, hey,
you did this in front of her?
And then I saw his email. Yeah, Joel's email address was Cleft Clips. And I was like, yeah, Joel. Hey, so, well, this email address of yours. Wow, that's interesting. Where did you come up with that? And he turned around and he goes, Tom, I have a hair lip. And I go, what? I had no, I what are you talking about? And he just busted me so hard, but he was so talented. And I remember one time we're at the Berrios Hotel, and Joaquin Phoenix came up to me. And Joaquin Phoenix is one of the, well, he's a brilliant actor, but he's one of the best human beings you'll ever know, and really is of service to a lot of people in our community, and is a great human being. And you talk about a low. You know, I was filming True Lies back in, I think, 93. And I mean, if you just hear his voice on the 911 call when his brother died on Sunset Boulevard outside of the Viper Room, I mean, how do you ever recover from that? You do. We go on. I don't know. And so I know him as being a very honest, wonderful human being. Anyway, he comes over, and I'm sitting there with Joel at the Polo Lounge. He comes over, gives me a hug. We talk a little bit, and Joel's like, Joel Manicourt always acted too cool for school. Like, hey, no big deal. He's not impressed.
Always.
With Joaquin Phoenix, I introduced him to Joel, and Joel's like, there's hearts coming out of his eyes in a cartoon. And Joel said, no, he is, Joaquin is the, because there's apparently, yeah. Lip too, he is the king of the, of them, of whatever. So them. That was the one time he was impressed. But, you know, I've had a lot of assistants that have moved on to do amazing things. Joel and one guy did SpongeBob and several Emmys and, you know, that means I'm old. That means,
I want to talk about that. Yeah. Because.
But I'm here today to talk about, you know, you don't always realize how dark things are or that there's sort of a fog in your life. I mean, you get up and go, you go at it. And I also think it's important to not carry ghosts. To not fight ghosts in your adult life from your childhood. A lot of people, they're still battling those ghosts. And, you know, I always said I wanted to be a father. My father was 20. When he was 22, he was a single father. And I was 4. My sister was 3. My brother was 1. And he worked in a factory. We're from a very blue-collar, small town. And
where?
In Ottumwa, Iowa, southeast Iowa.
Can I ask you, he's a single dad. Do you see your mom at all as a split custody? No.
My parents, my mom was an alcoholic like me and married 7 times, very chaotic life. And they went to court at first, and my dad's parents who were paying for both. And it came time to put me on the stand to basically say, who do you love more? Your mom or your dad, and then dad just couldn't do it.
Oh,
and so
you remember this?
The next day, I do remember that. I remember very little, but it's also documented. And also, after my last divorce, I kind of went through all the stuff and read everything, which makes it important to leave some digital footprints for your kids too about your life. But he the day after this. My dad gave up in court. He's like, I can't do that. And then the day after that, my mother came to my dad's office and said, here's the keys to the house. The kids are there with the babysitter. They're yours. So that was a big moment. That's a big moment because looking back for me, you know, I'm now the oldest of 7 kids. And, you know, she passed away when she was probably, 20, 30 years ago. So, you know, as you know, if you continue to abuse your body with alcohol and just that hard life and smoking. There's a lot of smoking where I'm from. You know, it wears out on you. And that's what happened with her. And we had a very acrimonious relationship at the end of her life. I remember, it was when I, early on with Roseanne and I's marriage, and I made overtures. We talked with this and that. Because I'd gotten sober and I knew how to do that.
Was she out of your life completely, or was it an in and out?
Well,
sort of
I mean,
thing
I was
as you grew.
I was go say hi to her, and okay. you know, I didn't, you know,
a stop by here and there.
Yeah, I stopped by and see her, and I did.
But did she live close?
Well, she lived in Iowa. And then
but how far away?
Roseanne and I had
a split. I mean,
we had a. Iowa was very. She lived very close. I remember as a kid,
everyone's parents did back yeah. then. They stayed close.
Well, you did, our town was so small. I mean, it was still a million miles away from my dad's house.
Yeah.
And I remember going to look for her and going house to house. Oh. It's very small. And finding her once on the couch with a guy. But you'd go out, and then I remember almost getting hit by a car and just being taken back to my dad's. And you just, you know, you're looking for something. And you make these parents heroes, you know. Because she'd always say, I'm coming back. I'm coming to get you. And, you know, I also have to be honest, I had wonderful grandmothers.
Me too.
You know.
I love hearing
that. Who just loved me unconditionally. Her mother and my dad's mother. And they're different kinds of grandmothers. My dad's mother was on me. My dad's mother ironed his underwear until she got out of high school. Very nice people. They traveled. My dad's father was... you know, he ran social services for our part of Iowa. They've got.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Educations, they had money, they traveled, they were part of the being of service to their community, and you know, really wonderful people. My grandfather was you know, in the war, he was one of the first people into Dachau. My mother's side is Jewish. My dad's side isn't, but he, you know, they had, and my uncle wrote the book, The Secret Life of Adolf Hitler, made that documentary. But my mother's side, they were working class. My grandfather on my mother's side worked at the meatpacking plant for 45 years. And the Jewish, there was four Jewish families where I'm from, and they were working class people. The four Cohen sisters that moved to this part of Iowa many years ago, they assimilated into the working, you know, they were, and that's what we did. And so, you know, I worked at a pork processing plant to save money for college. That's what we did. So, but my grandmother, my mother's mother, who did not get her driver's license until my grandfather died and just didn't do, you know, it was different, but she, and this is a key with kids. Kids know if you don't want to be with them.
Yes, they do.
And she wanted to be with me. I mean, she didn't say much, but she would sit on the couch with me, and we would, whether we watched TV together or whether she cut up beans or whether whatever we were doing, because, you know, we're from farm country. I knew she wanted to be with me.
That's really interesting you say that, because there's so much put into verbal communication these days and everything, but you're fucking right. Maybe sometimes nothing said between two people who just want to be together and be present with each other is more powerful than sitting there having fucking, you know, small talk.
Yeah.
That's I've never even thought of that before. How powerful it is that I want to be with you. Maybe she doesn't know how to communicate so well or whatever, but yeah, you felt that need to be present. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And she also, she also fed me whatever I wanted to eat. And just was impressed by my eating. And, you know, because my dad did not know how to cook. Both my grandmothers were great that way. And, you know, it's funny because my grandfather, my mother's father, was a big guy, and he was big into sports and tough for the meatpacking plant and tough. And, you know, I saw him get into more than one fight, and he's tough. And, you know, if you're a big, tough Jew and a big, you know, plus he, you know, if you're from a small town and you're different at all, like I didn't have a mother, so people say stuff. So my grandpa, I'm sure, had to step up and get into, you know, but my grandmother, you know, he also got stern with me a few times, you know, and I do remember my grandmother, even if he got crabby with me, just looking at him, and you, because you think, well, this is a woman that didn't even get to drive. She doesn't get to have, I bet he keeps her in this, but I saw her do things to him without saying anything, where he'd be like, oh, you know, listen, you're her favorite. I don't, I mean, he just would be, she could crush him. And you know, he has a right to go, you know, there's some things, sometimes I did stuff wrong. You know, I got in some trouble. Sometimes but if he got just crabby with me, as men tend to do, then he'd come back outside to whatever and say, listen, God damn it. You know, I mean, you're her favorite. You just tell that she'd put him back out there. But I sure love being with him. I just love being around him. I loved going to games with him. I loved it. So we all were, us kids, were looked after in different ways. And then when I was 10, my dad married the next door neighbor. Now,
did he?
Yeah.
Now, well, hold on. Can we talk about this for a second?
Yeah.
Our 20s were a while ago. 22, three fucking kids.
Yeah.
All under what, five at the
yeah,
time?
Yeah, all under
Man.
Five. My brother wasn't even one. And
wow.
Yeah, and
your dad sounds like a strong man
Well, he is. And I at the time, I do remember saying, God, you're boring. You know, you come, we're, you know, you work at the factory, and then we want you to play with us more. And he would get on the floor and play with us, you know, but he did work a lot. And, you know, you always want more. And I think about that now because, you know, I became a father at 54, and, you know, he did pretty well, you know.
Yeah.
In our town, too, I have to say that it's very union town. And I remember my dad, he worked so hard. And he did, he finally got, so he was management, I have to say. He finally saved enough money because he had to drop out of college when my mom said she was pregnant. So when she was 16, my uncle went on very successful. My aunt went to New York, an actress on TV and Broadway. My dad dropped out of school to take care of us. So he earned his degree slowly. But his plant went on strike, and he'd just gotten this Mercury Marquis convertible used, and he was so proud of it. And he parked it in the driveway, and our cousin was one of the men that blew it up. There was a strike, and then the police, and it was like my dad was so, because my dad was in a show-off, and he was the youngest of his family.
He blew it up.
And they blew it up, and it was, the cops had to wait till they did it. They were outside. They knew it was going to happen, and it incinerated it. And my dad, you know, because my dad did time study. He was an industrial engineer. So he said, well, if you make this many pieces of this industrial knife, you'll make this amount of money. And if you work this fast, very specific, you know, it's numbers. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like he was, you know, and man, the union guys, it's just, you know,
your cousin,
my cousin, Tommy Richmond.
I'll see you at the Tommy fuck out, Richmond.
But you know, again, when I grew older and Hormel, my meatpacking plant, when I was trying, you know,
that you worked there at Hormel. That was where you did the pork.
Yeah, the most famous strike, meatpacking plant strike ever. You know, I was so excited. I was like, yeah, we're gonna. I don't even know what the strike's about, but I am all in because it's gonna get crazy. You know. And then, of course, they fired everybody and just changed the name on the outside of the building to Excel and hired people half the. But, you know, it's a very intense, you know, but my dad did. I mean, there's so many things I think about him. And I'll tell you what, Ryan, I always thought this too, because my mom, you know, she would sort of, she had this allure, and the next door neighbor that he married, who had two kids, who I'd known since they were born, he asked us, he sat us down and said, do you mind if I marry wow. Ruth?
And how old are you at that time?
9. Okay. And she'd babysat us some, and she's from a different world, you know. She's more of a, you know, everybody's sort of a redneck, but she's more of a hillbilly. You know, she's smaller, you know, and she'd... She was big on the corporal punishment. I don't think we'd ever had that. And, you know, and I think she was younger.
Like what sort of, would she hit you, smack oh, yeah, you, yeah, yeah. shoe?
Yeah. Or... she'd grown up that way. And she right. was not my dad. She was younger than my dad. So she was even closer to my age. And I was the oldest. And I think she, and I'm sure I was a handful, but, you know, I was a kid. And I think she thought, well, I'm going to break this one. And, you know, very... And, but we did tell him, yeah, because we like, you know, felt bad for him because, you know, dating was hard and he had the best of intentions. Like my sister, you know, did not have a female influence on a daily basis. Yeah. Oh, but she was so rough. You know, I remember Lori, tackling her once because my dad had said, you have to put on clean underwear every day. He told all of us. And I tackled her from behind. I pulled down the back of her pants, and she had like 5 different pairs. She was putting on clean underwear on top of her underwear. And my mom was not a feminine, you know. My mom said 2 things. I'm not maternal, so, and I'm not going to tell you I love you, but I will tap you on the knee once in a while. That's the signal.
Man.
But then she was rough. People are kind of rough. You know, and I don't mean rough to insult. It's like the women, there's, you know, we compete. There's a lot of a barrel roping, and we can be, those are competitive sports for, you know, you grow up, the women work, the girls work on the farm with their dad. If their dad dies, the girl takes over. It's not like you go, oh, shoot, I got to find a boy. No, no, they're doing it with you. Whatever you do, when you go out in the fields of work, that your sister is doing it standing next to you. When a bus, when you go down to the church parking lot to get on the bus with the drifters, yeah, that's why you do every summer to go details of court. Your sister's with you. There's no, they don't go, girl, it's going to be easier for you. No, she's with you. A girls' softball, basketball, when I was growing up in Iowa, are way more popular. We're way, you know, state tournaments are way more popular than the boys were because they, you know, they're better athletes. They're a better team. Mm-hmm. You know, they people just cared more. You know, it's hard to tell, you know, who they're just rough. But my dad also wanted, you know, he felt bad that she doesn't have the, you know, you want to be around, you want to have a female in your yeah. life. And she was, so that was, that's what I guess he thought of a lot of things. He thought, I'm going to do this, could be the best thing. It was rough for me. And I ended up moving out and moved in
at what
with
age?
Grandparents the next year.
Wow.
But I moved in with his parents.
His parents, okay.
Who are, my grandma is super nice, super nice. And the first day I was in school and I came home with a black eye because that's what happens in school to boys. They get in a fight and they have a black eye. And I didn't think anything about it. And I'm eating dinner with my grandpa and my grandma. And all of a sudden she puts her head down and starts weeping. And my grandpa's like, what? What is going on? And it's because I had a black eye. I didn't even notice, like I'd gotten a fight. No big deal. And then I remember thinking, oh, she's going to be weeping all the time. Because, you know, it was a rough
grandma.
Town.
Yeah.
It was a rough, rough town. And I'm not going to be able to live here because that's another side. You go from people that have animus towards you to people that care so much that, whoa, I'd rather be somewhere in the middle. And also at that time, I did, you know, you look at these people that are like these Eskimos, these angels. And I did get, I wasn't popular. Again, if you don't have a mother, if you're different, if you're, and there were the older kids, and I guarantee I brought, you know, because I brought it on myself. And you, there's a lot of, growing up, a lot of fighting. A lot of fists, boys, you know that.
Tons of fights. Tons.
Yeah. So, you know, I got chased out of that school towards Hope. And at the bottom of the hill for my grandmother's was St. Mary's Catholic Church. And, you know, I didn't know, obviously I didn't go there, but they had a young priest that just got to town. And, you know, he'd see me get chased, you know, fighting and getting chased up towards there. And he was outdoors. Father Gary was his name. And he knows I'm not Catholic, obviously. And he was shooting baskets. I watched him a couple times as they ran up the side street to my grandma's. And he saw me one day. He said, "Hey, you want to shoot hoops?" And I did. And he didn't say anything to me. And then I did it, started doing it every day. And he never said anything, but it was just him and I.
I'll tell you,
it changed
like
my
life.
Because he was cool. This is a good-looking dude, cool. And also when those other guys who wanted to kill me saw him, they stopped. Because he's also big.
Yeah.
And they're like, what the hell's going on? What's the deal with this guy? You know, this guy is, you know, he's a preacher, and he's big, and he's, like, athletic, and he's Arnold's friend, who is not even, then they would start it, then they stopped. Like, he's his buddy? Okay, let's do, we're not going to, you know. But he never said, "Hey, go away," pretending he didn't know what was going on. I would have been embarrassed. But we shot, he shot a lot. And then, but it was a big deal to me to have somebody that just said, didn't go, "Hey, if you're getting beat up," I would have said, no, that's not happening. No, those guys, I'm not, no. You know, people, when I grew up, their parents would bring them down to fight me. Get up, you better get out of this. No, they're crazy. They are crazy. I'm like, God dang it.
Let me know how it go.
No, they're just vicious people. That,
yeah.
But they're also, you know, our town was divided, you know. They're straight up, the straight up racist. Our next door neighbor's dog was a big black pit bull, and its name was the N-word. That's not, whoa. There's no irony. Yeah. That, you know, it got lost a lot. There's those people, and then there's people like us who just hated, because they're so embarrassed. So there's the people like us. There was four black families, too, four Jewish. So they were our friends, and we just hated them because they're freaking embarrassing. And that's how every, in sports, in dodgeball, we're divided up, you know, the greaser. And also, did you smoke pot or did you drink? Because you couldn't do both. But we just hated those people. Now, until I got out of my town, I didn't know there was any other kind of racism except straight up N-word racism.
Yeah, black and white.
Yeah, just saying those, just people that say that word because they're scumbags and they have no teeth and they're disgusting.
But even being Jewish, you didn't experience it there? You
they just, it's too small, not enough Jews to hate, you know? I mean, we had, that's true. We had, you know, you hate, you say things. And with my grandpa's generation, there was sort of a secret, thing. And I knew enough about it from, you know, and funny enough for my other grandpa from what he brought back from Dachau and what he, you know, because that had changed his life. And you know, but in, they didn't want to talk about it, you know. But it's really true. And then as you get out, you know, but those people that said the N-word, I mean, they said a lot of kikes and a lot of stuff, and you just kind of went, well, those guys are the most ignorant fucks that we ever met in our life. They're so stupid, you know, that they're like, you know, they hate everything and everyone. We don't want anyone to ever see them, that we grew up with them.
Right.
Seriously, that's what it is. Yeah. They are so embarrassing. We don't want anybody to know they're white. Like, we need to put a cone over. I know this. They're embarrassing to humanity. And, like, I mean, I can't even explain to you how it is to be, you know. And then, but I saw some of their kids go on and come to school with us and want to do better and do better. And then so I had a lot of compassion, you know, for the kids, because they were really struggling with their parents. Jeez. And so I always felt like, well, you know, I had it, you know, things could have been a lot worse. You know, some kids want to get out of the alcoholism. Some want to get out of the freaking crazy racism, which is a disease. Like, it is, you know, and so you just want to go, I'm going to try to pull away from this.
Let's take a quick break and tell you about our first sponsor, Upstart. Now, during these economically turbulent times, everyone is looking for a way to feel more financially secure. So if you're still needlessly throwing money away every month at high-interest credit card debt, it's time you checked out Upstart, the revolutionary online lending platform that knows you're more than just a credit score. Now is the time to find out how low your Upstart rate can be to help pay off high-interest credit card debt. Unlike other lenders, Upstart can reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. You don't need a degree or a diploma to apply, though. Upstart lets you skip going to the bank because it's completely online. They offer loans from $1,000 to $50,000, so you can consolidate your debt into one easy fixed rate payment. Upstart makes it fast and simple to check your rate, and since it's just a soft pull, it won't affect your credit score. The hard pull happens if you accept your rate and proceed with your application. And the best part is if the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high interest credit card debt and get back to using your money your way with Upstart. See why Upstart has a 4.9 out of 5 rating on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/honeydew to find out how low your Upstart rate can be. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. That's upstart.com/honeydew. Our next sponsor is Omax. Living with chronic pain is the worst. It's more than a feeling of discomfort. It can affect your whole life. Many of you probably have some type of pain that's prevented you from relaxing and sleeping or stopped you from exercising. Perhaps it's been ongoing for a few weeks now and it hasn't improved with any of the treatments you tried. I just went to the doctor today. I got what's called trigger finger. It's been popping on me down here, this tendon. Been popping off. I've been taking Omax Cryo Freeze, putting it right on there, and I promise you it's making a difference. All right, enter Omax Health. If you're looking to get rid of nagging muscle and joint pain immediately while providing long-lasting recovery, then you need to try the natural breakthrough pain relief solution, Cryo Freeze CBD Roll-On, developed by Omax Health. This non-prescription triple-action pain relief roll-on is specially formulated to block pain receptors, reduce inflammation, and improve muscle and joint flexibility. And the best part is this 100% natural CBD powered remedy works its magic within 10 minutes of application, and relief lasts up to 8 hours, which is much longer than the over-the-counter products. Omax Health is offering my listeners 20% off a full bottle of CryoFreeze CBD pain relief roll-on. This discount also applies towards any products site-wide. So go to omaxhealth.com and enter code HONEYDEW to get 20% off Cryo Freeze and site-wide. I'm telling you, this product is the real deal. So go to omaxhealth.com and enter code HONEYDEW to get 20% off and site-wide. And I just want to give a little special attention and shout-out to my good friend Gary Adler, who launched a new comic book company called Odd One Out. The first series of comic books they're publishing is Commando Place. And what I have here in my hands is Commando Place number 1, Finding Konashiki. This debut comic is 53 pages of incredibly beautiful art with a unique and diverse cast of characters. It's set in a parallel universe. The heroes toggle between the video game world and the real world. It sounds crazy, but it's funny as hell. Go to Kickstarter.com. You can search Commando Place, and let's help Gary get the next 5 of these books made. If you're a fan of Doom Patrol or The Boys, you're going to love Commando Place, and now you can be part of its success. Go to Kickstarter.com and search Commando Place. Get out there, Night Pants Nation. See if you can't help them achieve their goal. Or if you just want to read the comic, there's no pressure. You just go to Amazon.com, and you can search Commando Place and order yours today. Now, let's get back to the Duke.
You know,
so how does it affect you as a father today? See, when you started fatherhood at 54. You had your first child at 54.
I did. It was a long journey because I've tried. I found out in college that I could not be a father the normal way.
How'd you find
it? Well, I went to the University of Iowa, and I worked at the hospital school for a job. I donated blood and plasma. A lot for beer money, you know, at both hospitals, Children's and the U of I. At any time on the board, they'd have different things for students for different jobs. You could donate, you'd be part of an experiment. Like me and my buddies were up for whatever. And one time, they said donate bone marrow. They needed it for one of the kids. They wanted to test. And I stopped there, and it was $75. It was the most I'd ever seen for something. And I was like, yes. Nobody even signed up, and I put my name first. You get your name first on any of these things. It's like if you work at a meatpacking plant, there's a different union, if a job's available, you put your name on it, you can move up. If you work at a meatpacking plant, you start in livestock where it's so bad because there's so much hog shit everywhere. You go inside to the kill floor where there's less hog shit, and then you hopefully get in somewhere where it's refrigerated, and then you go to the smoke shop where you can eat actual food that you're actually cutting. So it's always about moving up within the factory. So I see this $75 for bone marrow. Yes, that will be, and so then I'd be the only person signed up. And the nurses that I work with at the hospital school were not super fans because I was so, you know, they were like, oh, Tom, you're doing that? I go, yeah. Well, yeah, I'm doing it. Of course. You're our hero. I go, am I? Okay. And so I was like, well, that feels good. I've always liked to get blood and whatever else. And I did a sleep test for you guys, which was, you know, I'll do anything for these kids. And so I went to they took me into the room to give the blood sample, I thought, for the bone marrow. And the two nurses who I loved, but they always screwed with me. The doctor comes in, he goes, Arnold's doing this. I go, yeah. And he turns, he goes, listen, I can give you a local, I can dub that area, but it's still going to hurt like a motherfucker. That's what the doctor said. And the nurse had pulled loosened up my belt and pulled it down to my hip. And I was like, what, this, something's up. And he turns around, you know, and I should know this from being on a farm. He had one of those corkscrew needles. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And he screwed it. At the time, this was 1980. I was like, now I could have, and this is, people that work at the hospital still know this story. I could have run out. Like, I could have pushed out. I could have run
this
out.
This is for $75.
Yeah, $75 in 1980, though. But the nurse there looking straight at me like, you? But it was for potentially to save some. I know, I guarantee it didn't, but it was to test, you know, although I am still a bone marrow donor. I'd say that in my go. But this is back in the day. They much easier way. If you want to be a bone marrow donor, they don't do this. There's no way you have to do it this way to test you. I'm just going to tell you right now. To get it, you know, there's a, and so everybody's looking at me like, are you, if I ran out of there, I'd have to never work at the hospital. So I'd lose my job. I'd have to probably quit school. I mean, you don't. And so I just, it was so painful.
Oh, like right in the bone.
Yeah, but so then right after that, and then everybody's like, yeah, they just screw it right in the bone. I mean, it stops hurting at a certain point. But soon after that, there was a site that said $35 for sperm. And they started a new fertility clinic there. And I was like, well, that is. And so I called my five roommates and I was like, I can't believe our luck. I'm going to do this three times a day. We went running over there and they're like, slow down. We're going to have to test your sperm. And so I was like, that has to be easier. And then, you know, and the doctor came back and said, listen, I got some bad news. You don't have enough, you know, sperm, and you'll never get a woman pregnant the normal way, basically. Break it down. You have like four or three. And I go, that seems like it'd be enough. And but he goes, your roommate has 2 million. I go, that's fucking bullshit. Like, I'm still buddies with these guys. I go, he goes, you'll never get a woman pregnant the normal way. I was down about which is weird. Because now I'd be thinking, what happened to that sperm? You know, but then I'm thinking, well, I just want to make a bunch of money. I'll do it all the time. But then I also thought, well, this is also good news because, there was many times we'd be at bar closing and I'd say to women, yeah, I can't, I don't know if you heard, but I can't get you pregnant. Like sweat on you and give you a staph infection, but that's about it. Like, that was a calling. Like, in case you haven't heard, yeah, you don't have to worry about me. But
well, I went to do it one time also. I live with my grandmother, my father's mother, who was furious. A Catholic woman who was like, those are your children. Those are your children. I thought the same thing. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this five mm-hmm. times a fucking day. But what I didn't know that I found out when I started, mm-hmm. I never ended up doing it. But what I didn't know is that you're only allowed to donate a certain amount of times in a certain mile radius, because mm-hmm. mathematically it's possible mm-hmm. that those two children do meet up mm-hmm. and then they're ancestral kids and everything mm-hmm. else. So yeah. I was like, well, that just sucked all the thunder out of this. If I can only jerk off three times, like that's right. That's what's that? That's $105 and it's yeah. a wrap on that.
Well, that's probably now. That's this not was, in Iowa. In Iowa,
no, this was back in
yeah, that's pretty
God, the
smart.
Late 90s. But I hadn't even done the math on yeah. something like that.
Well, you know what? So when I got married to Roseanne, I said I really want a family. You talk about that before you get married. And Roseanne had kids, and she part of my attraction to her was she was a great mom. You know, we met in 1983 when I was 23, and I don't think she was 30 then, back in the Midwest. She wasn't even famous, and we just hit it off. We partied a lot. And I just moved from Iowa, and I think she liked me because I was a guy that would just, you know, I was so different. I wasn't that far out of the meatpacking plant. And she was also so different. She was this mom, and she was like a feminist, and she was... And I really respected her. And she was so funny. Her act was so funny. And she did the thing that men love more than anything. We know we're good looking, but she thought I was funny. And that's if you want a man to love you and follow you around forever, you tell him how funny he is.
You're right about that.
Because we're like, I know. And, you know, and I think you're like this too. I stood up for her no matter what. I mean, that was just how I am. And when I came out to write her show, because it was her show, and she was always right, because it's her show. It's a show about her life. And the problems on the show were that there were guys there. She never got created by credit on her show. And so at first, you know, I started off writing jokes for her back, you know, when I first met her, and that to see her doing those jokes on Johnny Carson was like, wow, you know, my friend is killing it and doing jokes that I wrote. And then eventually I came out to write her TV show. And then anytime when there was problems, I didn't understand exactly the finesse of how it works in Hollywood, and neither did she, obviously. But I knew that it was her show about her life. And, you know, obviously, I put the Iowa stuff in, a lot of the Iowa stuff where I'm from. But so she was right, and she was funnier than them, and it's her life. So I'd say, listen, I'm gonna tell you something. You're gonna do it her way, or else. I don't know how else to say this, but I'm gonna throw somebody out the fucking window. I'll eventually. Or you're fired or whatever, I'm going to, you know, kick somebody's ass. I don't know. Next year, maybe I'll learn some more finesse. But what do you not understand about the show is called Roseanne? And you got to quit fucking with her, because you're fucking with me. And I just don't know. I don't know how much more clear I could make this. And they were stunned, because I think they'd used to. But I was all in. I was like, because she was right. There's no, and then it was you know, then I brought a bunch of my friends out from the Midwest to write the show, half, and then I found an executive producer with me that I trusted to brought half of old school guys from Hollywood. I said, well, I'm gonna teach my friends to write the form, because I know how funny they are. They've each got unique funny voices. And then to write the form of a sitcom script, it's a form. Mm-hmm. You learn to do that, but you can't teach people to be funny and write in these different voices. And then I also want people that respected her character.
Right.
And but I also needed to. I didn't want a shit show. I didn't want to go, well, we're gonna recreate stand-up comedy or sitcoms. We're going to completely, but we had to produce a different new show every week. And they're so like, well, we're just going to, no, every week it had to be turned in. And I was aware of that too. So,
you have to get out of here in a little bit.
Yeah.
So I want to talk to you about being a dad.
Yeah. Well,
I know. So when Roseanne,
23.
So you did try with Roseanne.
You
did.
So 20 at Roseanne, we did. I said, let's not do in vitro. I don't want you to put your body through that. It's my issue. We tried 6 times and failed. And the great thing about my first 3 wives, a total of 20 times failed. And the great thing about each one of them got remarried right away to another guy and had a baby with that guy the normal way. So I'm grateful that they did it. And I'll tell you something else that happened. We went to an adoption lawyer, and this happened each time. And Sharon Stone, another great friend of mine, said, hey, because adoption takes a while. That Sharon Stone said, listen, I want you to go to my adoption attorney. He got my great boys. He will expedite the process. Adoption, you know, you can have a baby if your marriage isn't perfect the regular way. People do it all the time. Mm-hmm. In vitro is so stressful. It's the hormones. The couple is stressed out. Things might not be perfect when you have that baby. It's a blessing. But adoption, here's the thing. That baby has options. So the question is your marriage, are you good enough for that baby? Because people go, I'm going to get adopt a baby, and then I'm going to make...
That's a great point. Your baby is your baby, but mm-hmm. someone else's has a lot of options. Yeah. Your kids just got you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Roseanne and I went to this lawyer, and I thought, well, maybe it'll take 6 months instead of 2 years, whatever. And we're like, yeah, we'd like to adopt. And he's like, when? I said, well, you know, ASAP. And he went to his computer, and he pulls his picture off. He goes, how about in 45 minutes?
Come on.
This baby is just born in Wisconsin to a 15-year-old girl. And I tore the picture off. He handed it to us.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Look at the picture. This beautiful little red-haired little baby boy, and I said to Roseanne, "Do you think we're good enough for that baby?" And she could tell. She's like, "No." I go, "I don't think so either." And then we got divorced. That's when we got divorced.
Really?
Yeah. And that's basically what happened with my first 3 marriages. We were not good enough. Our marriage wasn't good enough to adopt a child. So that's what it was time
that's
to move
honest.
On. Yeah, but when I was 54, I did want to do... I wanted to do a sperm donor, by the way, because Shaquille O'Neal was my next-door neighbor for 8 years. That's no joke.
You got
There's
some
no
legendary
joke.
Neighbors.
There's no joke. And, you know, in Iowa, if you wanted to borrow a cup of sugar, and this is a fact, you went to your neighbor's door and you said, hey, neighbor, can I borrow a cup of sugar? And you know those cups you get for the fertility clinic? Mm-hmm. I swear on my life, we lived on a cul-de-sac, and I thought, how hard would it be for me to go get a cup of shack? And I swear, this is no joke. I just want, and here's what I think about God. I think our babies are up there. We're all up there. And my whole life, I've been waiting for my kids. And I've been, you know, and however my child, however I'm blessed, you know, it might be a 7-foot-tall black son. It might be a whatever. It might be through adoption. Whatever that soul, whatever, if it comes, it may not be in this lifetime, it may be whatever. And how lucky, you know, I'm not go, oh, well, wait a minute, does it have my DNA? My DNA is fucked up. My DNA is alcoholism and crazy. Whatever you know, however the baby came, you know, however blessed if I get, and if it doesn't work out, I'm so blessed anyway. And so when I met that Ashley, the mother of my kids, you know, she said, I'm going to make sure you have a baby. But she's whatever the relationship was like, you know, looking back, she said, you're going to do this. And she made it happen. And what happened is we tried the in vitro three times. And then the doctor said, there's nothing I could do. And I said, well, I said, too bad there's not something you can do on a man. And he goes, well, I'd like to, this is brilliant, doctor. He goes, well, there's something I'd like to experiment on a man. And I was like, and I saw her looking like, yeah, let's do that. I go, and the doctor is a very good friend. He's worked on Roseanne and I, all these people. And he goes, I go, well, what do you want to do? And the way my son came into this world is they cut my scrotum in half, which I should have just done this day one, and took a big syringe, which is much like the other story, and stuck it into my testicle and pulled one sperm out.
Come on.
And they happened to have one of her eggs. And this is a miracle. And they put them together, and it started multiplying. And it's a miracle, and it kept multiplying. And then they took that and they put it hoo-ha or whatever. And even without the sticky hormones, it just started. It stayed 1 month, 2 months, and I got so nervous every month. Just wow, what a gift! And then every month, just see more than a heartbeat, and then. So nervous, and I remember it was time to go to the hospital and get there. The doctor's like, everything's fine. He's fine, but I was like, oh my god, but he's breech. So we're gonna do a C-section. So Tom, you're gonna want to stay behind that curtain because you don't want to see this. And I was like, buddy, I worked at a meatpacking plant. I am not going anywhere. I got to see this because I just don't believe it's happening. And it was so amazing. And the second, you know, I see, you know, because I'm also on point, like, what if something goes sideways? I've delivered, this is something you don't want to tell your wife or telling me. I've delivered a lot of animals.
Have you?
A lot of calves. Oh, yeah, a lot of horses. Calves. A lot. And it's wonderful. I've said this, man. And sometimes things go sideways. And it does. You got to be in there. You know, the vet's there, whatever people you got there. But sometimes you got to put a knee under, you got to bear down. And sometimes, because, you know, it's always wonderful. You know, we raise cattle, we raise horses, we raise, and I know it sounds, but I'm always also on alert because that's your wife, that's your baby right there. You don't just assume that everybody here knows what they're doing, right? I mean, you're on point. So, and the way to do a C-section, because, you know, here's what you do if you think, oh, my God, I can't take it, because it is hard. It is hard to see a doctor, just let's be matter of fact, cutting your wife. So what you do is they put a circle around it, and you go, that's not her belly, they're not cutting. That's where the baby, they put a circle around it, and you go, that circle is a whole separate thing. That's where the baby comes from, that circle. You don't identify it with the person. You take it out and you compartmentalize it. And so that's what you do. But anyway, he comes out and I help get him out of there.
Yeah, what does that feel like?
Well, it changed everything. First of all, you go back to your childhood and it's everything. First of all, you go, I was that perfect at one time and that small. And you really are shocked that you look back on you think, wow, you know, because there's things that happened to you in your childhood. You kind of go, well, you know, I was this kind of kid or that kind of kid. And it's hard to believe that you were also perfect like that. That's how you were. And it's also, you realize, oh my God, I care about everything about this kid. And
And the way you had it, I mean,
yeah,
that's a lotto ticket.
It's a miracle. And, you know, a little thought later was my dad also cared about everything. Oh, I used to say, well, you know, I got in so much trouble. I got arrested 7 times. And once I'm a teenager, fighting the cops, fighting drinking, fighting. And then he had to bail me out of jail. And I'd be like, well, He doesn't care. He cares. He had to get up. He had to care. My other cousin was a cop. And he'd be like, he cared. I go, yeah, he cares because he couldn't sleep. And I realize he cared because you care about everything. And I, you know, every moment. And it was funny because I was cutting the cord and my son wrapped his fingers around the scissors. And I almost like cut his fingers off right there. I was like, oh, geez. And so every second, and you know, my friend said, listen, let your wife at the time do everything. But when he's 7, they'd come back. He'll be fine when he's 7. And I said, well, yeah, I'm 54. I don't know where I'll be when he's 7. So I've changed every diaper and stay with my daughter, who is a miracle. There's a frozen embryo. This is after the relationship ended.
Tell me how you had her. Yeah.
This guy Tyler Henry, I think Hollywood Medium. I did a show. My ex asked me to do a favor. She wanted to get a reading from him, and he came over. And I did not believe. I don't believe in that. He's also a one of the people that's talked to dead people. He's a whatever they're called, Eddie. And she liked his show.
A medium.
Yeah. He walks in my house. And he goes like this: "Your mother is here." And she is sorry, which is like an evergreen.
Yeah, sure. You think?
But anyway, at the end, he does this reading, and I wanted to bust him, but she's like big into this, so I thought I'll, you know, for her, whatever. And I go, hey, Tyler, you got any questions? Yeah. Am I going to have another child? Are we? Which we weren't having sex. We weren't together. We weren't. And I knew that my dad, he's like this. Yes, you are. This is on the TV show, so you see. I go, really? Boy or girl? And he goes, a girl. And I was like, oh, my God, this is the best thing I've ever, because it's impossible physiologically. I walk up to the door, and then, because she's never said I was right about anything, she goes, I guess you're right. He's full of shit. Like, he's her idol. He's her idol. That was, and then this is no shit. 48 hours later, I get a call from a cryo bank in Long Beach, and we use this other doctor in between Dr. Mars, that's our main guy, just because I don't know if he was out of town, and they had a frozen embryo stored down there. They were looking for me to pay $700 I'd owed them, and I changed business managers. They had it, and so she heard about it, drives down there 100 miles an hour, gets that shot up into her hoo-ha, and 9 months later to the day, my daughter was born.
Holy shit.
And I tell you, man.
248 hours
later.
I know.
It is crazy because I thought, I'm going to, you got to survive no matter what. No kids. I thought, man, I've been so blessed. And, you know, and then my son, I was like, okay, that is everything. And yeah, I did have a couple people say, well, you know, daughters are, I go, no. I had to have, and I tell you what. I'm glad I have a daughter.
I love it.
And, you know.
It's calmed. Has it calmed it you is, down?
Yeah. Well, geez.
The girl's, you know, calmed me down. I mean, but she just has a way.
She's also a great son. I have to tell you, like, my son, she's also by far the funniest. But it's also how close they are. You know, I designed, decorated the rooms that they wanted. And we, both sites were still in the same bed. But the way they, I just see them together. You know, when I get out of bed to pee, which is more than, they just moved together. She is his biggest fan. You know, he's 115 pounds. He just got out of kindergarten. He's a head taller. She's small. She doesn't take any shit. I watch out for that. But she is, you know, I make sure she gets her, he sucks up a lot of air. And I've always made sure 1 day a week is just me and her. But they love each other so much because I feel like this is an incubator for every relationship they'll ever have. And, you know, she never saw her mom and I hug, or she doesn't know how that works. And, you know, after her mom officially moved out, after, you know, I showed the videos of her birth, I went through it. She's like, how did I get here? And I said, love, you know, we loved you so much, and we wanted, you know, and I made a little cartoon of your mom. I was born over here. You're in heaven, you guys. And I wanted to, and then your mom was born much later, much younger. But we wanted you to be here. And then here you are. And that's how you came from love. And we both dreamed about you guys. And then we came together. And she goes, and then I was in mommy's belly. I go, well, you started, you know, here. I made it very clear.
You got it. I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Like,
no, you started. Here, yeah. Yeah. But I want you to know that you absolutely came from love, because that's really important.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, and then your brother came first, and then we all were waiting for you. And I literally I went down, and because her mom had a tough delivery with her, the first 4 hours, I had to take off my shirt, like, in front of, I didn't know I was going to do that, kind of an emergency, and hold her for a few hours, put her on before, then I went home, got her little brother, and brought him down for the first time, and I have it all on video, and it is so, I'm so glad I have that, because I'm explaining, you know, and then we came down and got you, and to see you, and it's, she's like, I go, do you remember that? She goes, kind of, and, you know, but she does remember me making her bottles at night, because I bring her back down the stairs, and she remembers, and once in a while she'll say, can I have a bottle tonight? Just once, I don't know if it kids, once in a while they want to be baby. And I'm always like, yeah.
You know? I love it. I can tell you love it.
I do.
I can tell you appreciate it too.
I appreciate
That's a big
it.
Thing.
Yeah.
I wish I'm have a similar upbringing in the sense that my mother split early. My dad was a single dad, but he died when we were 16. So then we've got nobody. We live with his mom, that sort of thing. But, you know, I'm a twin. I'm a fraternal twin, but I wish when my daughter was born, I was just like, I wish she was here. How the fuck did you do it? Twins, then another kid, like, you know, and I wish I had him to bounce questions off of, ideas off of, like, hey, when I fucked up and did this, what would you have liked to have done differently? You know, how can I better parent, better teach? Well, look, we got to get you out of here in a few minutes, but I have a question for you. I ask all my first-time guests this. After everything you've said, after everything you've been through, what advice would you give to your 16-year-old self with the benefit of hindsight?
Well, easy does it. You know, I mean, every dream I've ever had has come true. I think, you know, I've gotten very lucky about surviving. You know, I think I identified a dream, and then whether it be watching my dad watch Bob Hope on TV and laugh and go, I'm going to do that. I'm going to make my dad laugh on TV with Bob Hope beside me, or whatever it was. Just easy. Easy does it. Beware of got very lucky, you know, barely, you know, God was very, very lucky. I would have got married so much, save some money, but I'd hate to change that sequence of things. You know,
I like the easy does it. I mean, it changes nothing about your life in the course of it. Just try to relax a little, fuck. Yeah. I wish I'm still.
And
trying.
I don't
I'm still
I don't mean surrender. You know.
Yeah,
but. Because I do think that when you're a parent, you got to be ready. You got to be, because sometimes you have to stand up. We live in a world where, you know, you gotta be. It's like what I said about Roseanne with the show. I gotta, hey, listen, man, you gotta have people's backs. You're with people. You gotta have their backs. I got these kids' backs. You know, I'd like to just you said about have the energy. I have to have the energy. There's no excuse. I've got to do it. And I can sit around and say, well, I'm 61. they don't care. They look at you like, well, how do they, what would they know about that?
Nothing.
I got to do it all. I got to do it all. I got to get on the ground and play with them like my dad did. Right. I got to go outside and play with them. We got to play ball. We got to kick the ball. You got to box. We got to, you know, carry him up. I still, my son makes him me carry him up the stairs. He, 115, that kind of weight, like, yeah, you know, dude, that is with not, both of them,
yeah.
You know, it's like,
I can't tell you, my shoulder's always hurting. Mm-hmm. I got to switch sides and shit. Something. I'm like, man. Well, good for you,
thanks,
man.
Buddy.
Congratulations,
you,
too. But hold on. Well, please, plug everything you want to plug, everything.
Well, you know, Sasha Boggs is great comedian and great. She's great with the kids. She lives with us. We have a great podcast called Tom Arnold, Two of the Bush. She's a delight. We love her so much. She's 30. She's adorable. My friends all call, hey, are you guys having sex? I go, no. And they're, I didn't think so. She's really cute and young. I go, wait a minute. We could. Seriously. So we did that. We do this podcast, and you can see it on YouTube, I think, or Spotify or whatever, and it's going very well. And she's so funny. We're working there, and I was like, hey, you did a podcast, right? I saw it your thing, and it's so funny. Let's do one here. Because we're quarantined with these kids.
Yeah.
Let's do a podcast and talk about everything. She's so much younger, she knows nothing. You understand, right? And she's so funny. And then, but she's so good at the kids. And so we do that. And then we made a music video. You got to see this music video. Because kids' mom's like, you should send him to school rock camp this summer. I said, I am the school of rock camp. That's why you're talking to your neighbor who I like has a music store.
Yes.
I go, we do it all. I have rappers. I have great filmmakers that come in and out of my place, teach the kids stuff. So we made a rap video. The kids like rap music. I don't know what kind of music. They do the TikTok.
Yes. Yeah.
And so it's a little filthy, but I believe some of the words to the kids thing. But it's about our life being quarantined this summer. People asking me if Sasha and I are boating. And the kids, and we used everything about the house, and we had so much fun. But that's the life. And, you know, I have a movie called High Holidays coming out in a month or so with Jennifer Tilly's my wife. And the great Cloris Leachman is my mother-in-law. A bunch of really good actors. And then, you know, a lot of things, whatever. I need to work, Ryan. I need to pay some bills. I'd like to go back and do some road shows and
man, I missed
comedy.
I know. It'll be here. It'll be here eventually.
Okay, let's do it.
Thank you, brother. Thank you for coming on. Congratulations on the podcast and fatherhood. RyanSickler.com on all social media. Ryan Sickler, whatever it is. RyanSickler.com. We'll talk to you all.
I'm on Twitter, too.
yeah, Twitter.
A lot. And, Instagram. Instagram, man. I go hard on Twitter. Yeah, beware.
We'll talk to you all next week.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster.
According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.